Greetings and thanks for joining us here on North Metro TV for another episode of Conversations. I'm Eric Nelson, and in our studio today is Peter Lindstrom, the Met Council representative for District 10. And thanks so much, Peter, for stopping by. And of course, District 10 includes Blaine, Circle Pines, Lexington, a lot of the Ramsey County suburbs. So what you do does impact our viewers, doesn't it?
It sure does, Eric. First of all, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Love the chance to talk about the Met Council and its role in the metropolitan area. And yeah, you're absolutely right. It does have an impact here in Anoka County and in Ramsey County. And so you're right. It has a role in a wide variety of ways, which I look forward to talking to you about.
Yeah, and let's start out with, what exactly is the Met Council? I know it was started in 1967.
Way back in 1967.
Oversee the seven county metro area and come to conclusions, decisions on how this region should be run. Is that a fair way to assess what the Met Council is?
Fairly accurate. I would say in the late 1960s, the legislature said that we ought to create the Met Council to do things that were inefficient or difficult to do for each individual city to do. So for example, transit. It doesn't make a lot of sense for Blaine to have its own transit and Circle Pines to have its own transit, Lexington to have its own transit. It makes more sense to have a regional approach to transit. Same can be said for transportation funding, same can be said for wastewater services. And so that's exactly what we've been doing since that time, is doing things that each individual city would be more challenging for those entities to do.
Which is why it's Metro Transit, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's a big role that we have in our region, is Metro Transit. And it's interesting that you bring that up. It's even when you say Metro Transit, you may think the regional, the bus routes that we have, but it's really much more than that. Of course, in this area, we have North Star Commuter Rail. That's part of transit. We have arterial bus rapid transit, and I'm happy to talk about some bus rapid transit that's going to be coming to this area soon. And then we have, of course, light rail transit, mm-hmm. And metro mobility, which is such a vital service, not just in this region, but across, or not just in this area, but really across the region, provides upwards of 2 million rides for our residents, which is so important.
And you brought up light rail. And it's been expanding over the decades, but the spokes are not touching the extreme North Metro, so Blaine's not on a line. So from a bus perspective, how can you serve Blaine as good as maybe, say, Brooklyn Park, which is on the proposed line, on the Botno line?
You bet, yeah. Well, I'm really excited. We have the light rail, as you mentioned. We have commuter rail, the North Star, and then the bus rapid transit. Eric, I can pretty much guarantee that in a few years, if you have me back, we can talk about the excitement around the F line bus rapid transit, which is going to be coming to Blaine, to the transit center in Blaine here in a few years, 2026. And I live in Falcon Heights, mm-hmm. Close to Snelling Avenue. And that was where our first bus rapid transit was put in place, the A line. And boy, has that been popular. You know, transit itself has really been hit by the pandemic. And it's been slowly but surely coming back. And where we've seen the most rebound is on these bus rapid transit routes. People love the fact that they're rapid, that they're gonna get to their destination quickly. And they love the stations themselves. So you can buy a ticket or swipe your card ahead of time. You can just get right on the bus. There's some real-time signaling that's happening. So you know the bus is going to be arriving in three, four, 5 minutes. It's heated stations, and it's really convenient for people. So I'm excited to see the F line come to this area.
Is that similar to the express routes that you have in the northwest suburbs? I've taken some of those where I've gone from Champlin right to downtown Minneapolis, and then get on the light rail, and then I'm at MSP and I'm on a jet going somewhere for a really cheap price.
How about that? Heck of a deal.
Will that be similar for Blaine, where you can get on and go right downtown Minneapolis or St. Paul?
Yeah, it's not quite the same in that you're jumping on a express bus and then going right to downtown. But it's similar in that there are less stops than a regular route, meaning that there's a stop every, we'll say, quarter of a mile or so, maybe half of a mile. So you do to get to your destination much quicker, but they're coming more rapidly than, say, an express route that may just leave at first thing in the morning or, you know, 5, 6, 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah, because that's one thing I do hear. There are a lot of people that would like to take the bus and, you know, leave their car at home. Parking's expensive when you go to downtown St. Paul or Minneapolis. But there's not a lot of options as far as times, especially on the weekend. Is that something Met Council looks at?
For sure. Yep, no question about it. And that is one thing I hear the most, particularly as you go farther out from the core in the region, is just the need for more transit. Now we're excited. There's some legislative changes this past year that will enable us to look at that further. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I think we're excited about these bus rapid transit routes, but it's those regular routes, and particularly moving east-west. We have those routes that go into the core. Those express routes and other routes, but east-west is still not quite where I want it to be at, I know, and others too. So we're heading in the right direction, and we've got some work to do.
I know here at North Metro TV, a few months ago we did the transit bus going to the State Fair that was revived. It was incredibly popular in this area. And then also North Star resuming service to the Minnesota Twins. We saw the playoff trains fill up. Are those things that you keep track of and
Very
say, okay, the feedback here is unbelievably good?
Big time. We pay very close attention to that and try to double down those efforts, when, especially when we're seeing, you know, those Twin games, Vikings games, special events. We try to meet those needs, and I think we're doing that.
All right, let's talk about keeping the lakes and the rivers and the streams and our drinking water clean. Where does Met Council come in on that topic?
Yeah, that's such a critical role for the Met Council, the water quality. We manage or test, evaluate something like 150 lakes just in our seven-county Twin Cities region here, 21 different streams, plus 21 different sites on our three major rivers, St. Croix, Mississippi, Minnesota, where we are doing water quality testing almost every day of the week, no matter what the weather is. Even today, when it's the snow is flying and the wind is blowing, we have people out there that are doing water quality testing. And then, you know, we can test over time how those lakes are doing. And I'll tell you, some of the results, we're doing okay. We see the trends heading in the right direction. I'm thinking of like phosphorus in our waterways. We're heading in the right direction there. But other areas, we still are seeing significant challenges. Nitrate levels, chlorine levels, I think have doubled. And now we're seeing challenges with PFAS, the so-called forever chemicals, which are a big area of concern for us as well.
Just recently, Circle Pines was, saluting the fact that Golden Lake will come off the impaired list here soon. And it's been a decades-long process.
Oh my gosh, it takes a lot of work. Dave is one of my favorite people of all time. I just kudos to them for the work that they have done.
Were you, it's been really innovative. Were Met Council involved in that at all?
You know, I don't know if we were involved in the funding of that or not. I don't think so, but I have had multiple conversations with the officials there in Circle Pines. And one thing that we can do, you know, one thing that we're really good at is serving as a convener. So we can tell those success stories of that project in Circle Pines and make sure that every darn city in the region, if not even farther, knows what they have done. That's been a lot of hard work and money that's gone into that project. And they're starting to see results, which is great, and people should know about that.
So Met Council oversees a 7-county metro area. But as you know, we all know, the Twin Cities has, it's growing at rapid fire pace. I mean, the suburbs are sprawling. They spill into western Wisconsin now, and you almost St. Michael. Do you have any power in some of those other counties on, you know, the exurbs, so to speak?
Yeah, our power is pretty limited to the 7-county metropolitan area. Certainly, from time to time, we do engage with those exurban, western Wisconsin counties from time to time. It's pretty limited to the 7-county metropolitan area. But you're right, you know, we're seeing a fair amount of growth in our region, and certainly planning is a big part of why we exist and what we do. And thinking ahead, so we're just in the middle of our regional planning activities. And so thinking about hundreds of thousands of people that'll be making the Twin Cities their home in the decades ahead, where are these people going to live? Mm-hmm. How are these people and products going to be moving around our Twin Cities region in a way that is effective and efficient? That's a big role for the Metropolitan Council.
Yeah, and the Twin Cities really is a sprawling metropolis. Did you see this coming 10, 20 years ago? The growth, you know, in the snow belt, so to speak?
Yeah, I think that was one of the big reasons why the Met Council exists in the first place. I just heard the statistic the other day that in the mid-1960s, I'm right about this, that the Twin Cities had, at that time, was the second highest sprawling metropolitan area. It was Los Angeles and Minneapolis, St. Paul. And so I think, paying attention to those planning efforts is a big part of our role.
And it's funny you bring up Los Angeles or Southern California. I used to live in Orange County, and it's a great place, but it's been overdeveloped, in my opinion.
Can you bring some of that weather
Well,
up
I'm
here?
Working on that. I'm trying to get an ocean here, but I guess we'll settle for Lake Superior. But how do you balance the growth, the development, with also the open land, the parks, the space that made this a place that a lot of people wanted to gravitate to?
Well, that's where partnering with our cities is really critical. They're closest to the area, they understand the area, and so first of all, our role is to create a regional plan for growth, and we do want growth, but again, we want it to be efficient growth. So that's where we partner with cities like Blaine that has seen a tremendous amount of growth mm-hmm. over the last decade or two. And work with them hand in hand to say, okay, it makes a lot of sense that we can expand our wastewater service, for example, in this part of the area where you're anticipating more housing, more industry, more manufacturing, whatever the case may be. But in this area of the city, that's a critical habitat area or an area that we don't want to see for whatever reason. We want to set this aside for this purpose. So that's where we work hand in hand with our counties, our cities, our townships to bring that effective growth. efficient growth to the region.
So you've been on the city council in Falcon Heights. You were the mayor there from 2007 to 2019, and you had to be voted into those positions. Met council, you're appointed. So how many people are on the council, and the difference between being appointed and voting, getting voted in by the public?
Yeah, that's a great question. You're right. So I served both as an elected official and now as an appointed official. I think there's that decision is decided by the legislature. They make that decision on our governance. I was appointed in 2019. There are 17 members of the Metropolitan Council. All of us are part-time. This is not our full-time gig, except for the chair, who it is his full-time position.
All right, so you're working with the cities within the seven county umbrella here in the Twin Cities. There's bound to be friction. There's bound to be disagreements. How do you handle it? And does Met Council have the ability to overrule Blaine, say, in a situation where you're not on the same page?
Very infrequently, yeah. We set our regional plan, and then we work very closely with those local governments to ensure that their city plans, comprehensive plans, match up with our regional plan. You're right. I was an elected official for 20 years. I was a city council member and then a mayor for a long time. And I can tell you truthfully, Eric, that not one time did I ever hear, gosh, you know, we as a city want to do this in Falcon Heights, but the Met Council won't let us do that. That just never happened in my city. I can't speak for all cities, but, you know, sometimes there's disagreements or we have different viewpoints on things, but we all, I think listening, number one, is the first part of understanding where a local government is coming from, why they want to take the action that they want to take, and then bringing each other's perspectives to the table and making a good decision together.
So politically, these are polarized times, as we all know in the U.S., even here in Minnesota. But I'm guessing the Met Council tries to stay bipartisan, and you don't look at it as a red-blue thing. You're just here to make the metro area better.
Yeah, and the vast majority of our decisions don't split on party lines or partisan lines. There's no Democratic or Republican way to treat wastewater. Right, you just gotta treat
right.
It and do the best that you can do. I don't bring a partisan perspective necessarily to this position.
Affordable housing, that seems to be a lightning rod issue at times. Where does the Met Council come in on that? Because as you said, more and more people are coming to this metro area. They need a place to live.
They need a place to live, and it's becoming more and more of a challenge across the Twin Cities. And we are seeing that firsthand. We are, for much of the region, we are the what's called the Metro Housing and Redevelopment Authority for the region. And so that means that we manage more than 7,000 federal vouchers that people can take to find affordable housing. And I'll tell you, we have a long wait list for those vouchers. Every once in a while, every few years, we open up this wait list and we see tens of thousands of residents apply even to get on the wait list to get a voucher. And so, housing is it's just the baseline for everything, for success. You know, it's tough to do well in school if you don't have a roof over your head. It's tough to find a job, to hold a job, if you don't have a roof over your head. So that's really job number one, I think, for every policymaker not just on the Met Council, but everyone should be laser focused on housing during this these tough times.
What's fact, what's fiction about Met Council? Because there is criticism leveled by people at times at your agency. Is it fair?
Well, so, you know, some things are fair, some things are unfair. I think it's a fact that we're a very large organization, over $1 billion budget, thousands of employees, major projects that we work on. And so I think it's a fact that we have some amazing employees that go to work every single day and are working hard on water quality. They're out there, again, the snow is flying, and they're there on the Mississippi River trying to make sure that we have the best drinking water, the best water that we have, right, as an example. There are people out there who are going to work every single day that are trying to find homes for our most needy residents, that are providing rides, thousands, millions of rides over the year on our Metro Transit system, getting people where they need to go, right? To their school, to their job. And they're out there in all sorts of weather. And those Metro Mobility drivers, yeah, too, just providing that critical service, getting people to medical appointments or wherever they need to go. So I think that's a fact. I think it's a little bit more of a fiction to, I think some people have this impression that we're a bit of like the puppeteer out there and, you know, controlling things and telling cities what to do and that. I think that's a bit of a stretch.
Is the Met Council a quintessential Minnesota thing? I mean, is there a Met Council in St. Louis or Denver or Phoenix or Seattle, other markets of similar size?
Not so much, not exactly. I think the closest is Portland has a similar sort of arrangement. Other metropolitan areas have Council of Governments, where local elected officials come together and do some joint planning and may do some similar things to the Met Council. But really, it's pretty far and few between. And I'll tell you, I've had several conversations from other folks across the nation who are like, "Wow, I wish we were a little bit more coordinated in those places you mentioned, or other places across the nation, because there are certain benefits to have this type of entity."
Yeah, and the Twin Cities has certainly changed demographically the last 2-3 decades, and as we touched on, there's been explosive growth in some areas. Do you still feel like St. Paul, Minneapolis, the burbs is a shining light? It's a jewel as far as metro areas go around the USA?
Absolutely, 110%. I've lived here since the mid-90s, and we have challenges. You mentioned that our region is changing, certainly on the equity side of things. We have a lot of inequities. I would say that's one of our major challenges that we need to face in the years ahead. But yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of things that we can hang our hat on and say we're proud to be Minnesotans. We're proud to live in the Twin Cities, and so we have a lot to be proud about and a lot to look forward to.
How do you fix those inequities? Because there is a gap between the haves and the have-nots here that is maybe resembles Mississippi, which Minnesota would never want to say that, but it's factual in some cases. What's going on to try to fix that?
I tell you, I wish I had a silver bullet. It's really it is a challenge of not just working towards equity, but really working on those inequities. It's understanding what they are in the first place, and then just concentrating our resources towards fixing those inequities. And it spans the spectrum, and so There's no easy solution, that's for sure.
Anything else you want to get into that I didn't bring up?
Well, I'd just say if you're out there and you're listening to this and you have ideas on how our region could be improved, first of all, we will have opportunities for public engagement through our, I mentioned we're doing this regional planning right now. And so there will be opportunities for folks in Blaine, Circle Vines, Lexington, your other areas to come to meetings and say, hey, here's what I think is working great. Here's where I think we need improvement. And Met Council, let's see what you can do in this area. So that's number one. I'd also say we have committees that are part of the Met Council that where we have resident engagement, and so look for opportunities to serve in that role. And if there are things like the F line, if you're interested in transit in our region, then you can sign up for Met Council newsletters that are specific to those projects, or just general newsletters about housing or our parks or planning or transportation, transit, things like that. And call me if you you can just pick up the phone, give me a holler, and that's why I'm here. Send me an email. I'm happy to help you along the way.
And look into your crystal ball. Blaine has certainly become a major player in the Twin Cities with the National Sports Center, the 3M Golf, and all the other stuff that goes on here. What's Blaine going to look like in 10, 20 years once we get the Minnesota State Highway 65 up?
Got to get 65 up to speed, literally, instead of at a standstill there. I think I'm super excited about the improvements to 65. I've heard that again and again, that has just been a sore spot for so many years. So I'm looking forward to that big change. But yeah, other than that, I think I know that you've got that Blaine has a great city council, great leadership at the city, and I look forward to working with Blaine on parks, on transportation, on housing, and just planning for what does Blaine look like in all of southern Anoka County in the next decade or two.
And before we wrap this up, parks, trails, they're critical to the Twin Cities, aren't they?
Oh my gosh, we have 56 regional parks, Bunker Hills being one of the most popular. I mean, rightfully so. And what a treasure. We all know in this region what a treasure Bunker Hills is, and we have that's the good, you know, talking about the pride of the Twin Cities, we should have a lot of pride in our 56 regional parks, and I think it's like 400 miles plus of regional trails. Especially we saw that during COVID, right? I mean, when everything was shut down, our parks were wide open.
It was a lifeline.
And it was a lifeline for us to get out there, see other people, breathe a little fresh air, get some exercise, jump on the bike, go for a walk, whatever it might be. And so, we work closely with our 10 park agencies, including Anoka County and Ramsey County, and to make sure that they stay the crown jewel of the nation.
Peter, it's been fun. I've learned a lot. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Eric. I really appreciate it. And again, listeners out there, give me a holler if anything's on your mind.
All right, very good. He's Peter Lindstrom from the Met Council, a rep for District 10. That includes Blaine, Circle Pines, Lexington, and the Ramsey County suburbs. Thanks for joining us. This is Conversations here on North Metro TV.